John 16, verses 12 to 15. That's the passage that I was focusing on today. Three little verses, and I'll read them for you. I have much more to say to you, more than you can now bear. But when he, the Spirit of truth, comes, he will guide you into all the truth. He will not speak in his own, he will speak only what he hears. And he will tell you what is yet to come. He will glorify me because it is from me that he will receive what he will made known to you. All that belongs to the Father is mine. That is why I said the Spirit will receive from me what he will make known to you. So this John 16 verses 12 to 15, it's part of a longer passage where Jesus explains the work of the Holy Spirit to his disciples. And in John's Gospel, Jesus starts actually to talk about going away as early as chapter 7, verse 33. And so by the time that we reach his farewell words to the disciples in chapters 13 through to 17, it's clear what he means. His impending execution will take him from the disciples without leaving them desolate. He promises to be with them in a new way through the coming of the Holy Spirit. Now, this week's short reading contains the last in the series of the Paraclete sayings, which is often translated as like the Advocate sayings. The Spirit of Truth, which occurs in other contemporary Jewish writings, underlines the link with Jesus as the truth. And like him, the Spirit is sent by God to teach God's truth. There is much for the disciples to understand, but Jesus reassures his friends that they know enough for now, and that the Holy Spirit will come to guide them into a greater understanding in the future. So to Jesus, the Holy Spirit is the Spirit of truth, whose great work is to bring God's truth to each and every one of us. And we've got a special name for this bringing of God's truth to us, and we call it revelation. And this passage actually helps us to really understand the principles of revelation. I still have many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. So we can understand that revelation is not something that, you know, just comes down on us. Oh yes, oh that's it, you've got this revelation. Actually, revelation is a gradual, progressive process. And quite often it comes, you know, with experience as well. Now, many things Jesus knew he could not at that moment tell his disciples, because they were not able yet to receive them. And it's only possible to tell people as much as they can understand at one time. And actually, even over just a wee short period of time, we can only tell people as much as they can understand. We don't start with the difficult passages when we teach people a new language, do we? No, we start with simple, everyday words and phrases. And we don't start with like, oh, the really advanced theory. I can't even tell you like what any advanced theory is in algebra. But we don't start with the hard stuff whenever we're teaching algebra to children. We work up to the hard stuff. We start with the simple things. God's revelation to men and women is like that. And he teaches us what we're able and fit to learn at that time and place. And this most important fact has, you know, it's got certain consequences. You know, because if we look at the Old Testament, there's many passages in the Old Testament that can worry us and distress us. Now, see, as a young Christian, I am going to admit to you, I really didn't like the Old Testament. You know, I really found it really upset me quite often and really challenged me. And when I was on discernment for ministry, I even said to my mentor, Neil, that maybe I wasn't a suitable candidate for ministry because I didn't think the God that I knew from the New Testament was the same as the God from the Old Testament. But Neil explained to me that it wasn't God who was different, but the people who were different. And William Barclay explains this really well. At that stage of writing the Old Testament, there were all of God's truths that could be grasped at that time. In the Old Testament, there are many passages which call for the wiping out of men and women and even children whenever enemy cities are taken. And at the back of these passages, there's this great thought that Israel must not risk the taint of any pagan and lower religions. And to avoid this risk, those who do not worship the true God must then be destroyed. That is to say, the Jews had at that stage grasped the fact that there was the purity of religion must be safeguarded, but they wished to preserve that purity by destroying the unbelievers. But then when Jesus came, people came to see that the way to preserve that purity is by means of conversion. That the people of the Old Testament times had grasped a great truth, but it was one-sided to them. Revelation, you know, the full revelation was still to come to them. You know, and sometimes revelation has to be that way. God can only reveal as much as what people can understand. And something to remember is that there is no end to God's revelation. I think some mistakes that some Christians make, that we can make, is to identify God's revelation exclusively with the Bible. You know, that would be to say that actually since, you know, the writing of the last book, you know, in 120 AD, in the New Testament, that was it. God's ceased to speak to us. But we know that that's not the case. God's Spirit is always active. God is always revealing himself. Yes, God's supreme and unsurpassable revelation came as Jesus. But Jesus is not a figure in a book. Jesus is our living Lord. And in him and through him, God's revelation continues to us. God is still leading us into a greater realization of who Jesus is. God is still revealing his truth to us. And something else to consider is that God's truth is not just limited to what we might call theological truth. The theologians and the preachers are not the only people God inspires with his revelation. You know, when a poet delivers a great message in words that defies time, that's God's inspiration. Or a musician creates, you know, a wonderful piece of music that stands through time. That is inspiration from God. When a scientist discovers something that will make life better for everyone, that's God's inspiration. When a surgeon discovers a new technique that saves lives and eases pain, that's God's inspiration. And when someone discovers a new treatment which will bring life and hope to suffering humanity, that is inspiration from God, a revelation from God. All truth is God's truth. And the revelation of all truth is the work of the Holy Spirit. And so the Spirit as teacher and guide will enable Jesus' disciples and us to understand what he means when he calls them, and us to love one another as I have loved you, which he said in chapter 13, verse 34 and 15:12. Those to whom John the Evangelist write his gospel, they interpret Jesus' call as being in their now. And in their now, you know, they had a hostile experience, you know, where the local synagogues were determined to exclude them from the family of faith. Linking each new generation of Jesus' followers is the Holy Spirit, from the disciples right through to us. That continuing presence of Jesus and the church's everyday experience and the assurance of his enduring love, joy, peace, and hope. The Gospel of John provides further evidence of Christians using the language of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit to tell their story, with its power to speak of God's sacrificial healing love in a world so often fed by hostility and violence. And in the wider church calendar today, it is Trinity Sunday. And the Trinity is not a doctrine to be dissected, but a relationship to be fully experienced. God in Trinity reaches out to humanity, reaching out through word and symbol, calling out through the prophets, and ultimately speaking out in the incarnation of Jesus. God the Father sends Jesus his Son, and the Father and the Son together send the Holy Spirit. God, the Trinity, is relentlessly, eternally reaching out. But when he, the Spirit of truth, comes, he will guide you into all the truth. He will not speak on his own, he will speak only what he hears, and he will tell you what is yet to come. He will glorify me because it is from me that he will receive what he will make known to me, to you. All that belongs to the Father is mine. That is why I said this, said the Spirit will receive from me what he will make known to you. And this is such an incredible statement. The Spirit will draw the disciples and us into the life of the Father and the Son. The Trinity is the eternal invitation into this love. And that might seem too big and difficult to get a handle on until you remember that God reaches out to each and every one of us by name. The Trinity is reaching out to us in love and relationship. And through this relationship and that love, our experience of God grows and develops. And it is informed by the past, yes, and we will always have more to learn and understand. But we live in the now, and the Holy Spirit will give us what we need to do with that now. So we don't need to dwell in the past or worry for the future. We can live in the now. What is your Christian story? Now just take a wee moment, you know, to consider that just now. Some people are brought to church from a very young age and they've never been away. Their experience of God is a relationship that has built up gradually. For others, there was a sudden moment when, faced by God, you know, revealed in Jesus Christ, they said yes. Now, Nicky Cruz was a Mau Mau's gang leader in New York City when he first encountered the evangelist David Wilkerson, who told him that Jesus loved him and would never stop loving him. Cruz actually hit Wilkerson and even threatened to kill him. Now, sometime later, Cruz heard about an evangelistic meeting organized by Wilkerson in the local area. He went together with a few of his fellow gang members to the place that they were, the meeting was to be held. And according to Cruz's own account, when he arrived there, he felt guilty about the things that he'd done, and he began to pray. And after he'd preached, Wilkerson actually asked the gang to take the collection. Now, Cruz led the gang through the crowd, insisting on people giving money. You can imagine it, can't you? You really can. Come on. And going backstage, he was actually tempted to run off with the money. But he convinced the gang to go on stage and give the money to Wilkerson. And a short time later, after an altar call, Cruz gave his life to Christ. That must have been an absolutely incredible moment. And of course, not all moments are like that, but every moment is an opportunity to do something. God is with us now. The past we cannot change, and the future is yet to be revealed. But we can respond to God in the now. It's up to us to make something of it. The imagery of walking with God is often used to describe a relationship with God and how it can grow and develop. The poet William Cowper suffered the most terrible of depressions, but he managed to cling to a faith. He wrote the well-known hymn that begins in this way: "Oh, for a closer walk with God, a calm and heavenly frame, a light to shine upon the road that leads me to the Lamb." He goes on to reminisce fondly of a closer relationship and to long for it again now. "Return, O holy dove, return, sweet the messenger of rest. I hate the sins that made thee mourn and drove thee from my breast." Then there appears to be a gradual realization that the wonderful relationship with God is still and always possible now, as the hymn concludes. "So shall my walk be close with God, calm and serene my frame, so purer light shall mark the road that leads me to the Lamb." Perhaps Cowper's imagery can help us to understand and receive Jesus' teaching in the gospel reading that we've heard today in John 16, 12 to 15. It is as if in that pleasant stroll, the Spirit of truth gradually unfolds the truth, but we are to hold on to what we have and celebrate the now of that moment. For God is with us now. Let us